Today's program was brought to you by the Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York, partnering with Grow NYC on a pilot project to make farm fresh trees and wreaths available at green markets. For more information, visit christmastreesny.org.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I am Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we bring the culture to horticulture. So today we're going to talk all sorts of vegetables, how-to info, historical fables, political intrigue, and seed saving, all with a new vegetable theme. Who knew? So we have with us today in studio an author of a gorgeous, gorgeous new book, Heirloom Harvest, Modern Daguerreotypes of Historic Garden Treasures by Amy Goldman. And the book is published by Bloomsbury Publishing.
Now, speaking of books, before we get into our interview with Amy, I want to remind people that every week in the month of December, Timber Press has graciously donated one book to a lucky winner. So we're going to announce this week's winner. It's Donna Sevitz Plunkett from Troy, Ohio. So Donna, get in touch with us at info@groundworksgardens.com. We'll also send you a Facebook message. You have won a Catherine Alto's new book about the landscapes of Winnie the Pooh. And Timber will send it directly to you. So congratulations.
So Carmen, tell us a little bit about Amy Goldman.
Okay. All of you should know her, by the way. But if you don't, let me give you a brief synopsis. Amy Goldman is a passionate gardener, seed saver, and well-known advocate for heirloom fruits and vegetables. She is the author of The Complete Squash and Melons for the Passionate Grower, and she appears frequently on such TV programs as Martha Stewart Living and Victory Gardens. She is one of the foremost heirloom plant conservationists in the United States. Goldman is described as, quote, perhaps the world's premier vegetable gardener, unquote, by Gregory Long, president of the New York Botanical Garden. In addition to this book, Amy has authored several other books about vegetables, including Melons for the Passionate Grower, which was published in 2002 by Artisan, and it was nominated for several other awards, including the Garden Writers Association of America 2003 Garden Globe Award of Achievement, and also The Complete Squash, A Passionate Grower's Guide to Pumpkins, Squashes, and Gourds, which was published by Artisan as well in 2004, and was chosen as the 2005 American Horticultural Society Book Award winner. And finally, The Heirloom Tomato, From Garden to Table, Recipes, Portraits, and Histories of the World's Most Beautiful Fruit, was published by Bloomsbury in 2008. It was selected as a recipient of the American Horticultural Society's 2009 Book Award. So there's a theme here.
Yes. And if that is not distinguished enough,
yes.
We have a new book, Heirloom Harvest, Modern Daguerreotypes of Historic Garden Treasures, Bloomsbury, just published this year. It's illustrated by a daguerreotypist. Is that how you say it?
Daguerreotypist.
Yeah, exactly. Jerry Spagnoli. The book features over 175 photographs of fruits, vegetables, nuts, herbs, and berries grown by Amy on her 200-acre Hudson Valley farmstead. Amy's essay, Fruits of the Earth, describes her 25-year collaboration with the land. Heirloom Harvest has been reviewed by the Washington Post, El Decor, Harper's Bazaar, and Town and Country. And the daguerreotypist, Jerry Spagnoli, met Amy Goldman, a champion vegetable grower and heirloom plant conservationist, in 2000. What began with photos of a few squash that Goldman brought to Spagnoli's Chelsea studio eventually grew into days spent on the farm, photographing freshly harvested specimens and those still on the vine. The result is a series of idiosyncratic portraits of vegetables and fruits that celebrate the unusual textures and surprising shapes encouraged by traditional farming techniques used on heritage species. So what's also included are images of livestock and poultry and views of the farm and the landscape setting that produce the pictures in a larger context. So welcome, Amy.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be back with you again.
Thanks for coming to Bushrake. Now, you were on our show, or on a different show, a while ago, promoting the tomato book. Is that right?
That's right. It must have been around 2010, something like that.
On Linda Palacio's show, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We love Linda.
Yeah.
She's great.
So tell us, Amy, how did you become interested in heirlooms in particular, and why?
Well, I've been gardening most of my life. I started growing vegetables when I was around 17 or 18. And then around 1990, I read two books about heirlooms that really changed my life. And one of them was Roz Creasy's Cooking from the Garden. And the other was called Shattering, Food, Politics, and the Loss of Genetic Diversity in Agriculture by Carrie Fowler and Pat Mooney. And that taught me that there was basically a mass extinction event in agriculture threatening. So I started growing heirlooms and loving them, started exhibiting them at the local county fair in upstate New York, and started winning prizes and got deeply involved in the heirloom seed movement over time.
Uh-huh. And that's the Dutchess County Fair, right?
That was it, my hometown fair.
Uh-huh. And so tell us, what was competition like?
Well, I never could have, you know, gone into it. Well, let's say I never expected to get wrapped up in it for about 10 years. But it's kind of addictive. You win a couple of prizes, and then you want more. Uh-huh. And the whole process kind of unleashed a competitive spirit I never even knew existed.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just clean fun. Good, clean fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my mom participates in the Richmond County Fair, and she's an incredible vegetable grower. And she started, you know, she's gardened since she grew up on a farm. She's always gardened and grew food. And she started, and she couldn't stop. My dad finally said, okay, this is getting crazy. She was winning all the time. She's like, give someone else a chance.
Well, sadly.
Exactly. That's what happened to me. Yeah. Finally, at the end, the judges said, yeah, give someone else a chance. Yeah. So, and in a way, that was really good advice, because then it made me think, what's next?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so,
and what can you do to promote this?
Exactly.
Right.
So then I started writing about what I was doing.
So where are your blue ribbons now, Amy? Are they in your house?
Yes, they are. I have a shrine.
So what was your proudest moment at the fair? Like, what was there a particular vegetable or fruit that you grew that you really were like, yes, this is great.
This is the squash.
This is the one.
Oh, there were so many, but I would say one of the standouts is my American flag leeks that won Princess of Show at the New York State Fair in Syracuse 1 year. So that was top honors. And then my crowning glory as a competitive vegetable grower was winning the Virginia Brook Pennypacker Gardener's Sweepstakes Award in 1998 for the greatest number of blue ribbons in three or more horticultural classes.
Wow.
Then I hung it up after that.
Yeah. Did you wear the tiara when you got the Princess Award?
And leeks aren't, I mean, you don't think of them as especially photogenic vegetable necessarily, right? I mean, you could see a squash but...
Well, you know what? Jerry Spagnoli made them look beautiful in the new book.
Yeah,
really, he did.
So let's get into the book, because the daguerreotypes are so rich and so gorgeous. I'm speechless. This book is a jaw-dropping, like, speechless book. It's gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
So why daguerreotype? What made you choose that form for this particular
Well, they kind of chose me.
Yeah.
Because it was a friend, a high school friend of mine, whose husband was was representing Jerry Spagnoli at the time, and they suggested, why don't you try working with Jerry? And I before I'd even started writing my first book, and that was in the year 2000, I didn't know what a daguerreotype was. And so we just started trialing a few things. Mm-hmm. I would, that first June, I sent down to his studio some squashes and gourds that had grown the previous year, went to a studio in Chelsea, and then he started working his magic and his alchemy.
And it is alchemy.
It is.
It like really
literally.
Is.
Literally and figuratively.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
What I love about some of the images is because it's a daguerreotype, you get these crazy contrasts, you know, between white and black and even the grays. And they almost look alien and otherworldly, some of the surfaces of the melon and the textures, I think, that are particularly articulated because of the medium. It's just... It's phenomenal.
And it's a little bit, I mean, if it's the same technique, the same 19th century technique. Not much has changed, right, Amy, in terms of how it's done.
Well,
right?
So things have evolved over time.
Yeah.
But, you know, Louis Daguerre invented photography. This is the most heirloom of heirloom photography in 1839. And a daguerreotype is an image that's fixed on silver-plated copper. Mm-hmm. So that still remains true today.
Okay.
Although Jerry has altered the technique somewhat, but it's basically defined as an image fixed on silver-plated copper.
Uh-huh.
And so the plates themselves have certain reflective qualities that may not be evident on the page, but most of it is evident, and they do seem ethereal.
Yes.
Some people have described it that way. And I think the technique hasn't been surpassed in terms of the precision that it picks up. And you feel and you see every little lump and wart and, you know.
Yes.
Right. That's why it seemed otherworldly to me, because it seemed like almost like a photo of one of the planets or a comet, or you just see every nuance.
And the diversity of the textures, too.
Yeah.
It's not like some are shiny, some are matte. Some, I noticed, almost have a kind of, I don't know if it's the paper that it's, is it printed on, you know, the special paper, but it almost seemed like cloth, some of the textures woven.
Yeah, that's the magic of it. I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, Jerry went on press in China, and Bloomsbury, you know, did a phenomenal job on the production of the book. But Jerry and I wanted to make sure, after 15 years of collaboration, that everything was just right. And it's just right. It's I'm thrilled with the end product.
So how did you pick the plants and the vegetables to be in this book?
Good question. Every year I grow hundreds of varieties of vegetables and fruits and literally thousands of individual plants. So when I started, it was whatever I had on hand. And it began as a lark. And we never realized where it might lead. But in time, it became a serious collaboration. And so in the early years, I was just growing whatever I wanted to grow and what I was, melons, squashes, tomatoes, peppers, and so, you know, everything else you can imagine. Whatever was in season and looked good. And eventually, you know, for the first few years, we did the work in Jerry's studio, but then he invented some technology that allowed him to travel to my place in the Hudson Valley, and he set up a studio in the barn. And I would go, harvest vegetables and fruits, whatever looked good, mm-hmm. and he would photograph them. So eventually we amassed, you know, several hundred, maybe close to 400 images.
Wow.
And in the end, we chose the ones that I love the most and also that paired well with each other.
Right, right. In looking at everything together, I imagined, like a curator would.
Well, the designers, Doyle Partners, did an extraordinary job on this book of pairing and, mm-hmm. you know, the special design elements.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And how did you choose the cover image of Chard?
Well, we went back and forth a lot. You know, and covers always seem to be the last thing to be arrived at, but it's called Silverado chard. It's chard, Swiss chard is also known as silver beet, and what, you know, just seemed to be the perfect choice for a medium that involves silver-plated copper.
Right.
So
right.
It is silver par excellence.
Yeah.
It spoke to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, but it's so luminous.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The process of each image takes a long time to process,
it does.
Right?
Yeah.
That's part of why daguerreotypes aren't, you know, were surpassed by other types of photography, right? That it took a long time, and also there were kind of chemicals that were not so pleasant to be around. Is that correct?
That is true. There are toxic chemicals, vapors mm-hmm. of warm mercury and other things that you know, are toxic, and so
yeah.
It takes a special kind of person, and Jerry's been called one of the members of the antiquarian avant-garde.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So bunch of people who are bringing historic techniques back to life.
Uh-huh. So tell us a little bit about the tiny, one thing that's depicted, the tiny Queen Anne melon.
The Queen Anne's pocket melon,
yes,
is a beautiful small egg-shaped melon that is so fragrant it can perfume a room, and they're beautiful egg-shaped, striped, golden yellow and orange, rust orange, and women used to carry them around in their pockets to perfume themselves in the days before deodorant, but this type of melon has been known and grown for over 1,000 years in Egypt. And so it has a long, industrious, illustrious.
And industrious.
Yeah,
right.
History.
Uh-huh.
Is that the oldest heirloom in the book?
I haven't thought about that, but
it sounds
a lot of them go way back.
Yeah.
Sure. They, you know, agriculture has been around for probably around 10,000 years.
Right.
And so there are a lot of old heirlooms in there. For example, the hard shell gourds are very, very, very ancient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This year for Halloween, I got a hard shell gourd, and, you know, everyone else was quickly carving their pumpkin, and I was still sawing and sawing and sawing. And my little boy kept saying, "Mommy, hurry up." And I said, "Nope. If you want this to look good, it's got to take some muscle, you know, to saw through that hard shell was quite a labor."
And I've noticed in the markets now, I mean, even at the wholesale level, when we had to do some fall decorating for some of our clients, Amy, and one of our suppliers had the largest selection of gourds and pumpkins than ever. I think that, you know, before when you would go to a sort of pumpkin patch, there would be not as much variety,
mm-hmm.
but we're seeing much more of that.
Yeah, very gratifying to see.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you had something to do with that,
well,
perhaps.
I'd love to think so.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Each of your books really demonstrates the most incredible photography. I mean, this one takes the cake, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking at this Savoy cabbage.
Yeah.
Right? That's not an uncommon variety, but wow.
Uh-huh.
You know, photograph like this, it's...
Oh, I have to say, Jerry really had a field day with that one. He did it first. Well, if it was that one, I'm not sure, but he did it in cross-section.
Oh.
And he was... he still is interested in the formal structures of the plants. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, there's a lot of structure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's like, there's just so much depth to this.
I actually prefer the cross sections because I really like, to me, it's almost inner worlds within the tissues. And I love that that's highlighted in this book and through the photography. And, you know, because it's, that's the DNA. That's
We definitely had fun with it.
Yeah.
Cutting things open and even occasionally eating our subjects after we had shot them.
I love it.
Sounds like sacrilege. But.
Well, you have in here the lumper potato, right?
Yes.
Now, is that the variety? Is that the one from Ireland that I wanted to ask you about that? Because I think I had remembered that in the history. That was the one that got the blight. Right.
That's right.
The potato famine.
That, you know, contributed to the potato famine. And I had never seen a photograph of it. You know, I had read about it.
Pretty lumpy.
It is pretty lumpy.
So tell us about some of your other favorite heirlooms and any quirky stories.
Oh, goodness, there are so many. Let's see. They may or may not be in that book and this book, but, you know, I did the three earlier books were done with photographer Victor Schrager.
Uh-huh.
And we're actually working on a fourth book now on heirloom peppers.
Oh, great.
So there are a lot of quirky stories to come about peppers. I won't reveal them just yet, but, tomatoes. I'm sure you've heard about Radiator Charlie's mortgage lifter tomato. Yeah, that's a good one. There's, you know, on a personal level, a fun one called Sarah's Galapagos, which I named for my daughter, Sarah. We collected it in the Galapagos.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so tomatoes are native to the coastal highlands of South America. And so we brought it home. It's a small red currant tomato that grows on a very large, unwieldy plant, and it's absolutely delicious and offered seed on the Seed Savers Exchange, and it's become very popular.
All right.
With everyone except my daughter, Sarah.
Okay, hang on. We have to take a break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the Seed Savers conservation work that you do. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network.
This is the story of men and women who shed not only their clothes, but also their...
Ever wonder where your Christmas tree came from? Now you don't have to. New York State-grown Christmas trees are now available in New York City. Trees grown on farms here in New York State are harvested just a few days before arriving to the city. Trees cut close to home stay fresh longer. And trees cut close to home travel less, which reduces fuel consumption of delivery vehicles. Did you know that buying a real tree helps to sustain agriculture in New York State by supporting local farmers and keeping important open space in agriculture production? The Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York is partnering with Grow NYC on a pilot project to make farm fresh trees and wreaths available at green markets in Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan. So when you shop local this holiday season, you can include the tree in that list. For more information and a full list of locations, visit ChristmasTreesNY.org.
Hi, I'm Liz Smith, audio engineer for Heritage Radio Network. Personally, I think I have the coolest job in the world because every day I come into work and record shows ranging from homebrewing to horticulture, from lifestyle tips and tricks to culinary history. Needless to say, I've become a stellar dinner guest. And, you know, my job wouldn't be possible without support from listeners like you. If Heritage Radio Network shows accompany you on your way to work, on your way home from work, while you're cleaning the apartment, or maybe you just love what you hear, you should consider donating. Check out our brand new beautiful website at heritageradionetwork.org and notice the little beating donate heart up in the top right corner. Your support will go a long way. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. We're back with author Amy Goldman and her amazing book, Heirloom Harvest. So before the break, we spoke about the Queen Anne's pocket melon and its seed. So tell us about your work with the seed saving
Seed Savers Exchange.
Yeah. Right, and in conservation.
Okay, so I became a member of the Seed Savers Exchange in 1990. It was founded in 1975. It's the nation's most prominent nonprofit seed saving organization. Mm-hmm. The membership of 13,000 people, gardeners, orchardists, amateurs mostly, mm-hmm. Based in Decorah, Iowa. And the medium of exchange is an annual yearbook in which members offer their seeds to each other. In addition, Heritage Farm is probably one of the most diverse farms in the world, where a collection of vegetables, thousands and thousands and thousands, are grown out and preserved in their gene bank there, and also safety duplicated in the Svalbard Global Seed Vault in Norway. They do a lot of wonderful and excellent publications, and so I became a member. Then I got involved in the heirloom seed movement seriously and joined the board, eventually became board chair, but stepped down a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so remain a special advisor to the group.
Uh-huh. And do you go on seed hunting expeditions? You mentioned the Galapagos, and I wondered if you were doing traveling like that.
Yeah, well, that happened to be a vacation, but I'm always on, you know, alert.
Seed alert, yeah.
Yeah. No, I get seeds from many different sources. My travels, from friends, plant breeders, commercial seed sources, uh-huh. and so forth, yeah.
So you do a lot of sort of trialing in your gardens,
that's... That's largely what I do.
Yeah.
So for this pepper book I'm working on, I'm in my fourth year of grow outs.
Okay.
And this year I grew over 450 different varieties of peppers. And Victor and I pretty much have all the photography in the can. but I'm still chasing a few varieties. And we should be finishing up maybe next summer with the grow outs. And then I start...
Right.
Doing the research and writing.
Right. So your garden must be unbelievable. It must be really fun.
It is fun, but it can be overwhelming.
It's challenging,
too.
I just
finished the pepper taste test a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Because I taste everything, including the super hot varieties.
Ooh.
And I do field notes and so forth. So I'm collecting the data.
Uh-huh.
Evaluating, trying to find whether it's a pepper or a tomato or a squash, trying to find the most beautiful, historic, delicious, unusual varieties in the world.
Uh-huh. So how do you tend all of this?
I start everything from seed, uh-huh. in my greenhouse in spring. And, you know, it takes a lot of vigilance.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Once things are in the ground, I have an assistant, uh-huh. who helps me with routine maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm sure you have how many acres of crop?
Well,
area?
So the farm is about 200 acres, and I have three vegetable gardens now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say in total it's about 2 acres of vegetable gardens.
That's wow. substantial.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's irrigated, I assume,
I was just gonna
right?
say.
Well, or, yeah, we water if,
right,
if needed.
Needed.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right.
And we needed it this year. It was a terrible yeah. drought in our area.
Yeah.
So, but despite that, I have to say it's probably the most bountiful harvest I've ever seen in all my years there, 27 years on this farm. And I think farmers in the Hudson Valley found the same thing. Mm-hmm. Enormously wonderful year for tree fruits and fruit vegetables.
Do you do much with fruits, or is it mostly vegetables?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there are a lot of fruits pictured in Heirloom Harvest.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just finished up making the last batch of Ida Red applesauce this week, and I freeze a lot of that.
Uh-huh.
We do cider with pears and apples. We grow a lot of fruits, small uh-huh. fruits and tree fruits.
And you do a lot of preserving. I mean, there's, I'm sure you share tons of bounty with your friends.
Absolutely.
And family.
Friends and family.
But you preserve the harvest as well.
Yeah, and I actually I'm growing things for seed.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
That I then offer to other members of the Seed Savers Exchange.
Are you involved with seed libraries at all?
I haven't been.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been involved with seed libraries.
Uh-huh.
Really.
A friend of ours that we were describing to you early, Julie Shapiro, at Harvard, she's the photographer of their seed collection, and she is doing a lot of opening of seed libraries on behalf of Harvard and support. And we just saw her up at New England Grows.
Yeah.
We were up there for the conference. And it just, you know, it was great timing because it got us thinking all about your book and the heritage work that is so necessary.
And she does macro, you know, she does like the way she photographs seeds, you know, you just see them in such minute detail.
They're so beautiful.
Yeah.
Seeds are
yeah.
so beautiful. Yeah.
It's very... So is there one, Amy, that got away? Was there an heirloom that you really wanted and you still haven't been able to
touched
get
yet.
Touched and grow?
The wind just keeps blowing it away from your fingertips.
Oh.
Or that you're waiting on, you know, waiting for,
yeah.
you know.
Well, I can't think of anything off the cuff right now, but I'm thinking of one plant that I wish had been included in Heirloom Harvest, and it wasn't a vegetable. It was an oak tree that, and I wrote about it in...
The one that's on your property.
Yeah, so I, you know, so in addition to Jerry's 175-plus daguerreotypes, the photographs in the book, I wrote a personal essay about my travels over time and space the last 27 years on that historic farmstead. And there was one resident of the farm that blew down last fall, and I thought we'd captured it on film. It was a 200-year-old white oak that was really such a veteran, and it would have been known to the man who built the house, Abraham Traver, in 1788, and his children and grandchildren. And it was kind of devastating to have it fall down and then realize, oh,
yeah,
we didn't capture it.
Civil War, World War One, World War Two,
yeah.
Vietnam,
yeah,
everything that
yeah.
that tree has seen.
I know. So we did our best.
Yeah.
And of course, now today, even this summer, I'm thinking, oh, I wish Jerry could have been here to photograph this. Anyway, I think we have a really beautiful representative sample of edible plants.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said it's a 15-year.
15-year
journey.
15 and, seasons.
And not just edible plants. Let's talk a minute about the animals. And I was thinking about the daguerreotype and how long it takes. And to get that photo of the cows, right?
Well,
so that must have been a challenge.
Well, actually not.
No? So tell us
not in the way that you think.
Okay.
Though Jerry is a hero. He just, you know, waded through muck and sticky stuff, just imagine, in that pasture. But over time, now remember, if you define daguerreotype as an image fixed on silver-plated copper,
right.
the way you fix it, you know, is variable. And what he did at the end, at first when we started, he was... using plates in camera, and then
right.
the technology evolved so that he could then use a modern camera and then fix it.
Oh, okay.
And then fix it, but still with all those toxic chemicals and everything else. So, but how he got that photograph of the red pole cattle, you know, I think I had my back turned at that moment because it's extraordinary. So a newborn calf suckling on his mother and just so beautiful. Yeah. So that's a very threatened breed and introduced to America in the late 19th century. And it was a cross of two breeds that are, I think, both extinct now, at least one of them. And so it's the red pole cattle is they're wonderful, very docile, beautiful. They're used for both dairy and meat.
Mm-hmm.
And
they look
trying to build up their herd.
That's great. And they look a little smaller.
They looked a little small, yeah.
Is that right? Smaller than, you know, the kind of Holsteins and other bigger steer that are more popular now. Are they a little bit smaller? Or
well,
is it just
I couldn't tell you. I haven't grown the other. But anyway, they're lovely. And then we're also keeping Buckeye chickens, which is a breed that was bred by American woman, maybe 100 years ago or so.
Uh-huh.
And they're also very docile.
Uh-huh.
And we're working with the Livestock Breeds Conservancy to preserve their genetics.
Mm-hmm.
Just built them a new chicken coop.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we're going to be serious about it.
Uh-huh.
How many cattle do you have now on the farm?
Six.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they just are pasture raised?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
And in the winter,
we have a run-in shed.
Okay.
They run in there if they need to.
Do you grow any cereal crops, Amy, at all?
No, we don't. Although there's some, there's rye in there. So I did grow rye one season because I knew the Traver family once grew rye.
Yeah.
I love that you use the history of the house and you're so aware of it. I love that in your essay as you really talk about each owner and what they brought to the land. And
it was a fascinating history. And the Traver family came over in the Palatine migration in 1710. And Abraham, the man who built the house, was among the third generation of his family to reside in Dutchess County. I got very wrapped up in the genealogy and family history and architectural history of the house.
I think that's what your sensitivity, I think, to the land and to these heirlooms is really necessary. And just thank you for all of your work.
Thank you.
It's been really
I think people are catching up to what Amy discovered
a long time ago. Right.
I think people are finally catching up.
And hopefully there'll be a lot more entrance into the world of competitive
vegetable
growing.
Sure there will be.
Actually, there is a phenomenal new book coming out by Jody Torpy, Blue Ribbon Vegetable Gardening, coming out this week.
Oh.
It is marvelous, and she really captures the fun, the competitive spirit involved in growing nature's miracles.
Yeah. So tell us also, now, anyone who knows you knows that you are a huge supporter of community initiatives and NYBG. You do a lot of work with NYBG. Can you talk a little bit about your community work?
Well, NYBG, the New York Botanical Garden, based in the Bronx, and also BBG, Brooklyn Botanic Garden, have been involved as well as a supporter over the years. But I've been on the NYBG board for a very long time and now serve as a vice chair. And it's a great institution. And I invite you to come visit. We just finished a marvelous Frida Kahlo exhibit that really with record attendance. I think something like 500,000 visitors this year. But it's a great scientific and cultural institution, New York.
Yeah.
We had one of the curators or interpreters on, right, from about the Frida Kahlo, because we were blown away when we went in August, Amy, to see that show.
We actually took our gardeners there as just like a day of fun, you know, non-gardening. Let's go do something.
It was well done.
Amazing public programming and education.
Yeah.
Educational scientific research.
And the train show right now.
Oh, yeah, the train show. It's terrific. And I understand it's doubled in size this year. Yeah. So it's really worth seeing.
No, Gregory Long has just done amazing things with that garden.
He has.
You know, it's really fun to go there because there's something for everyone. That's what I love about NYBG. And BBG. Carmen and I have been very involved with BBG for a while, too. I used to be a judge for the Greenest Block in Brooklyn contest.
Oh, is that right? Oh, wonderful.
A long, long time ago, and we were on their junior committee for fundraising, and Carmen is a docent at the Children's Garden.
The New Discovery Garden is really wonderful, too.
Marvelous.
It's coming into its own. So there's good things happening all around New York. So the book is available everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Heirloom Harvest. Is there any?
It makes a great.
Oh, it's a
holiday present.
I can think of several people now that I think need to get this book, because even if you're not into gardening or photography, it's just
everybody's into vegetables.
Yeah, I mean it's just
they're beautiful
for someone who's into cooking or just an amazing. And there's yarrow in it too. There's a photograph of yarrow, which I was...
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, some herbs and...
Yeah.
Yeah, but for me, the book is, you know, a way of honoring beauty, history, and diversity in the face of pressures not to garden and not to save seeds.
Right. Well, Amy, it's been inspirational to have you with us, and thank you again for all of your work. Everything you touch seems to grow, and that's a lovely...
My pleasure, and thank you, too, so much.
Thanks.
So if you you go on our Facebook page, you will see some of the images, but I highly recommend that you get the book. And thank you for listening to We Dig Plants. You can follow us on Twitter at We Dig Plants or on Facebook. And remember our weekly book giveaway with Timber Press. Thanks for listening.
And on Instagram,
yes.
Groundworks Gardens NYC.
See you in the garden.
Program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.